Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Sober as sober. Sober. Sober as
welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program devoted to bringing hope to those struggling with mental health issues and addiction. Through candid conversations with guests about mental health issues, addiction, and sobriety, we can let those who are struggling know that they are not alone. I am your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have Nina Gorman. Nina is Yupik, originally from the Bristol Bay area. She now resides on Dena'ina land. Nina is the director for Aim High LLC, a temporary housing program that helps homeless veterans. On this show, Nina courageously shares her story for those who are still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome Nina Gorman. Hi, Nina. How are you?
I'm doing good. Just sitting up here looking out my rainy day out there and thankful to be alive and well.
Yeah, definitely. You were referred to me by my sister, of all people. So I appreciate her and I appreciate you for agreeing to share your story on this show.
You bet. An honor, a great honor. And, you know, your sister has also been one of the strong women. You know, I look up to women that are strong, you know, and she's one of those in my life that comes in and out of my life. You know, we do different things, but she's somebody that I definitely look up to.
Yeah, definitely. Before we get into it, can you go ahead and introduce yourself so everybody can get to know you, please?
Absolutely. So I'll introduce myself in Yuchtun and then in English, if you don't mind.
Yeah, definitely.
George Iluchiklina, Iluchik Tutranga, Aleknikiram Yuhunga, Jalilu Nayang Chukpani Kanga, Bristol Bay Army. And on my father's side, I'm from Missouri, and my grandparents are Harold and Edith Gorman. My father, Benjamin Harold Gorman. My mother's Gasatun name was Masa Ilutsik Gorman. And I am Nina. I have about 3 Eskimo names that I know of. They call me Nina Banina in English. So I am Yupik, German, Jewish, Irish, and Russian.
Wow.
I think I got them all.
Very cool.
I'm a Gudak, oh, Ralph.
I've never heard of that analogy. That's funny. Yeah, so cool. And like I said before, I'm so grateful to have you on and thankful for your courage to share some hope to those people out there that are struggling.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's been a stigma around addiction, mental health, you know, and it needs to be talked about. It. Some years ago when I was going to UAF, they now call it behavioral health. In the early 2000s, they called it human services. That's when a lot of my healing began. And as you and I both know, as I've listened to your story, if you stop the healing process, you can go back to what you're used to. But I'm thankful, you know, that our Creator is patient with us and that He is a God of grace and mercy and love, and that He patiently waits for us to come back to Him and to be real and honest with Himself, with us, with Him, with ourselves, and with others. Because freedom comes when we start dealing with the lies that we believe that have kept us stuck. And shame is a big one, right? You know, shame keeps people from getting help. The other one is pride. You know, pride keeps people, you know, there's a saying, you're only as sick as your secrets, right? So when you begin to talk about these things and expose them, they lose their power over you because there is hope. And there is help out there available. And I'm really thankful for the day and age that we're in now where we have people like you, especially a Native man, because there's a lot of Native men that have a lot of stories out there. But because of what I just talked about, it's hard for them to come forth and share. So I'm really grateful for you, Ralph, just so you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, truth. Nina, can you go ahead and let everybody know what things looked like before you decided to get sober?
You know, I was one of those people, you know, some people, their bottom, it doesn't have to be that far before they figure it out. I was, by the time I was 15 years old, I was already an alcoholic. By the time I was about 23, I was a full-blown alcoholic. And me turning to alcohol and drugs had everything to do with what happened to me growing up as a child. Now, I'm not going to go into detail. I don't mind. I bear my soul a lot. I've been doing it for a long time now. I don't have shame associated with sharing my story anymore because I've had a lot of healing. And a lot of it, like I said, has had to do with discussions like we're having right now. But back then, it had everything to do with what I believed about myself, my identity. I was definitely in an identity crisis by the time I reached young adulthood, you know. And, you know, I had been, you know, like so many of our people, you know, I'd been in different homes and raised by different people. And so I didn't have a strong foundation. You know, my mother and father split up when I was little. And my, you know, we grew up in several different places. When my mother died, we went out states, and we had a very abusive home for about 7 years out states. And then when we came back to Alaska, it wasn't the same as it was when we left as little kids. By then, alcohol and drugs had infiltrated our villages. And so there was a lot of the expectation of, oh, come back to Alaska where I have the good memories. And you know, and it's kind of like the Wizard of Oz type thing, you know, you think you're coming. And then to come back to that as a young adult and then to be pretty disappointed was very heartbreaking. And so I was suicidal. I was very rebellious. I was very angry. And I discovered that at a young age that if I, you know, took a drink, it could, I could escape. So that was what I started out using alcohol for, was, you know, for escapism. There was a lot of peer pressure, you know, where I grew up. And I'm from the Bristol Bay region. And, you know, partying was just the thing, you know, the adults were doing. Now, my grandparents, they were not that way. And we eventually came back in our grandparents. But the thing is, because we were out states for 7 years, we were not allowed to speak our language, you know, our stepmother, like, literally beat us and things like that. And so we lost our Yupik, you know, a lot of our Yupik language. So when we came back to the village, you know, there was a communication problem because my grandparents' first language is Yupik and then English, right? And then we'd been so westernized that English became our primary language. So there was just a lot of things that happened. And I didn't know where I fit in. And especially being mixed, you know, having Gusak and Yupik, that was, you know, I had to start working on that. And because there was a lot of prejudice on both sides, you know.
Yeah.
For being white on one side and for being Native on the other side. And so I had a lot of self-hatred, Ralph. And I was very suicidal. And the signs were there, but nobody seemed to be picking them up. And then, you know, so it was like the only way that I could see where I could function was to be high on something because reality just hurt so much. nowadays I'm so thankful. You know, I'm now 58. I was 15 back then. There's a lot of help available. And that's what I really like about your, because I was listening to your story and I was also listening. I'm not sure who the lady is, but you know, there's phone numbers you can call. There's people you can call. You don't have to do this alone. And so when I was invited to come on here, I said, yes, I will be glad to share my story. So I had to start working on myself and I needed a lot of help. And it's, for me, it started in the early 2000s when I left my village and I went to Ovalekniggik and I went to UAF, University of Alaska Fairbanks, enrolled in college, and I took a Psych 101 class, and I left the class shaking and I knew something was wrong. I'd been sober for a while, but there was something about that class that I was upset. And I left and I was shaking. I was like, I'm either going to go get drunk right now or I'm going to go get help. And that was the beginning of my recognizing you better go get help. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not, here you are enrolled in college, you're doing good, blah, blah, blah. And you're getting ready to throw it all away and sabotage it all like you've done over and over and over again. So I ended up in a clinician. Clinicians, they offer 3 months of free counseling. And that was the beginning of my journey with, you know, reaching out for help and starting to tell my story. So lots has happened since then. You know, I've had like, you know, ups and downs. You know, I've gone back out several times since then. This is the longest I've been sober. And that's because there's certain things I have to do on a daily basis. And then I still, you know, every now and then, you know, I'm not perfect. Like, you know, I for whatever reason, you know, I tend to turn to things that are not good. I mean, and it's not just alcohol and drugs, you know, it can be food. You can turn to food and you could just try to eat your feelings away. Mm-hmm. It can be maxing out your credit card. It can be jumping from one relationship to another relationship. Mm-hmm. But all of these things are used to as an avoidance technique. So the problem is still there and you're trying to reach out to these external things that are not going to take away the suffering and the hurt and the pain and whatever it is that you're going through until you deal with that, the pain inside of you, whatever it is, the unresolved issue you have that you didn't deal with, you're going to still keep doing those things and you don't get anywhere. So it took me a long time to realize that that is exactly what I did. You know, even after coming off of the alcohol, that there was other things that I did. The other one is to be a workaholic. You work so much that you don't have time to deal with the real issues, but they're still there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's a little bit of my story.
Yeah. And being in that safe place where you can feel okay about sharing, you know, just like you said, Native men, Native women, you know, Native people in general, a lot of people were taught not to talk about their stuff, you know, mm-hmm. their feelings and their traumas and what's bothering them. It took mm-hmm. me to be in a closed door situation, you know, with a clinician to even start to think about that stuff because of that, you know. But once I did, mm-hmm. You know, talk to, you know, that clinician, it like opened me up. You know, and that could be like letting things out and feeling less of that heaviness.
Absolutely. You know, I also went in and saw a clinician. I always remember she was so good at what she did, because my mind tends to wander a lot. And if you have a lot of unhealed trauma in your life, you can find yourself going there, you know, and those are definitely tied to addiction as well. And so the clinician that I had, when I would start to talk to her, she'd say, okay, Nina, I want you to think about where you are. And she goes, where are you? And I said, I'm in this room. I thought, is she like being, you know, is she really joking with me or what's going on? You know, and she goes, okay, then I want you to look around. What do you see? on the wall over here, a picture. She goes, so Nina, the important thing is, this is where you are. You are in my office, in a chair, in this room. Learn how to stay in the present.
Oh, yeah.
That was huge for me.
Yeah.
That was big for me. And that was just a small thing of many things I've learned from many people over the years. And I'm still learning. And I figure as far as I'm alive, as long as I'm alive, I'm teachable. I need to be teachable. The day that I'm not teachable is a day the Lord needs to take me home. Mm. Because to have that attitude is really important, to be teachable. There are people that sobered up and they're doing something right to stay on that track. So what is it that they're doing?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the more that we band together, the more we're willing to talk about things. And like you said, safety. People need to feel safe. They need to have a safe place where they can open up.
Yeah.
They need to know that they're unless they're called to air out their dirty laundry, which, because I've had a lot of healing, like I said, I have no problem airing out my dirty laundry because it's not dirty anymore. You know what I mean? But I share it because I want other people to know they're not alone.
Yeah.
Been there, done that. I went to several treatment centers. My family didn't know what to do with me. I ended up in a mental health institution twice. You know, there was a lot of cries out there for help for me. So it basically came down to it's either commit suicide or stay drunk because I just don't know how to live sober. It hurts too much.
Mm.
So I had to, you know, when you clothe yourself, you know, with other things, you know, you put this clothing on you and you know, that's what you hid behind in order just to function in society. You have to start looking at that because it didn't, it may have worked for a while, but now it's killing you, right? Yeah. So when I first sobered up, I felt naked because I was carrying all this guilt, this shame. This was not clothing. And I am a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ. And he died on the cross for my shame. He died on the cross and took it in his body for my guilt. And one of the things is that I used to be like a super religious person. I'm a spiritual person. I have a relationship with my creator. I love him. He's so good to me. I just use, you know, he's spirit. They just happen to use him or whatever. God is spirit. We know Jesus came as a man, you know. But I used to have even a false belief system about how my creator saw me. And that was because I believed lies that were spoken to me as a little kid. And once those lies began to be unraveled and the truth came in and I began to get healed, that I started getting better. I started being able to function in society because I was only attracted to people that were in the same position I was in. You know, and when I started getting better, I started being around people that were in the recovery mode. So, you know, I don't ever want to forget where I came from either, Ralph, right?
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time in jail. You know, I was very rebellious and angry at authority figures. And like I said, I had a distorted, there's a difference between being religious and having a relationship with God. And I used to be religious and I tried to put on airs and act like I was some kind of a super Christian, you know, with all this and that, when I was broken and hurting and crippled inside. And that was, today I'll call that Christianese, okay? I'll just slap a scripture on it. I believe in the Word of God, it is powerful. But God does not want me slapping scriptures on a wound that he wants to heal. He wants me to be honest and real with him, with myself, and with others. And that's where the healing comes. Mm. Then he gets to take the shame that he took anyway, if you'll hand it to him. And he gets to take the guilt that he paid the price for in his body. And he will clothe you with himself. Mm. And he's a good, good God. He has a lot of mercy and grace, I know, patience. because he's been that way with me. And I'm asking him to help me to be that way with others, because I had so many people come into my life along the way that have taught me a lot of things. And I still have people in my life today. I have to have that. If I start finding myself isolating, like you said, Ralph, I've done that too, right?
Yeah.
I only need this one thing. I'm good. You know?
Yeah.
Maybe it's, I just need to go to church on Sunday and go, I'm good the rest of the week. Oh, no, I'm not. This is an everyday thing for the rest of my life, for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of a stigma around people that struggle with, you know, mental health, with addiction and that kind of a thing. And like I said, it's because of the pride, shame, guilt. And once you start working through those things with people you can trust, you know, that are not going to, you know, use your story against you, but are going to help you with it and connect you with, you know, if they don't have the help. So my thing is, if I can't help you, I'm sure I can find somebody that can.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Nina, what's driving your sobriety right now?
The thing with sobriety is this: accountability, right? I love the fact that I have people in my life today that will literally, and because of my personality, and because I, you know, a lot of times I'm just can be really stubborn, strong-willed, you know, full of pride and all that thing kind of stuff. I have people today that will tell me to my face, and I need them to tell me, you're acting like this. I don't know what's going on with you, but you know, you might want to look at that because it's not good and it's not healthy. I have those kind of people in my life today, right? So they help me to be accountable. I need those people. I'm that person for others as well. I'm asking God to help me to be more gentle and compassionate and not be so blunt. People where I'm from, we tend to be like, bam, you know, we're just like super blunt.
Yeah.
And, you know, that can be hurtful, you know, so, and, you know, with different people have different personalities. So, but the thing today is I feel a responsibility to share what happened with me that took me off the path that was leading to death and destruction and where I was just depressed and saw no hope. Was barely hanging on. You know, what changed in my life? When was the turning point for me? And you know, for me, it came down to surrender, to admitting, you know, you can't do this alone. You're not expected to do it alone. And you need to get honest and stop hiding behind these false narratives. You know, that you, I'm putting on masks. I want to say masks. So it's like, I'd become like, I was the sweetest woman ever, love you and generous, kind boy. You give me a drink, I'm this evil woman that nobody wants to be around, right? Well, there's a saying, a drunk man's words or a drunk woman's words are a sober man or woman's thoughts. So that's why it's important that we don't keep things inside that are hurting us, right? That you know, things that we're hanging on to, resentment, unforgiveness. There's all kinds of things tied to why we try to escape, right? Even that thing of, oh gosh, I worked so hard. I deserve to go out and party.
Yeah.
You know, there's just so much with that. And it's just like, not good. You know, you're always going to lose. You're always going to lose something. And I don't want to be that woman. I struggled when I first sobered up because I didn't know how to be sober. I didn't know how to function in society. I had to have a lot of help, Ralph, and I still do today. And having to get to that place to say that it's okay that you don't have it together some days. But to isolate and keep that to myself, that's dangerous for me.
Wow. Yeah, definitely. On that note, how would you encourage somebody that's struggling, or what would you say to somebody that's currently struggling?
I would like to say that if you are somewhere you just feel like there is nobody, I have nobody I can reach out to, start with a prayer. Just start with a prayer. And prayer, you don't have to pray this super long, fancy prayer. Just even a God help me. Start there. And then look for resources in your community. Look for resources in your community. If you have people that you can trust. You know, there are trusted elders in our villages. They didn't get to be an elder for nothing, right?
Yeah.
You know, they've been through a journey. And there are trusted elders, and many of them are really quiet, and they're just waiting for someone like you to sit down. And you can figure out which ones are going to, you know, lovingly help you, and others that maybe, you know, just being real, that may not. They may not understand. And if you can reach out to people in your community, that's the best way. You know, if it's a health aide or a teacher or whoever you have available or another family member, it definitely needs to be people that trust, that you can trust with your stuff. If there's people you can't trust, then you should know, such as I heard on your, when I was, you know, looking at it, is that there's numbers. There's a care line. There's numbers available that people, you can make a call. It's anonymous. Like, I like that you say anonymous Eskimo, that you can share your stuff and talk about your stuff with, right?
Yeah.
That can help you with services, direct you. The worst thing you can do is to isolate and try to white knuckle it.
Yeah.
And that's we've done it. You've done it. Yep. I've done it. We don't get anywhere that way. So don't be ashamed to ask for help. No man is an island. No woman is an island. We're not meant to do this alone. Mm. We're meant to do it together. And we're stronger together.
Wow. Nina, thank you so, so much for sharing your story and sharing all the hope out there to people. I really appreciate you. Thank you so much.
For you, Ralph. Keep up the good work. Continue to share your story and bear your soul. And you're definitely on my prayer list, covering you with prayers and with love. You know, keep on keeping on, brother.
Thank you.
And I especially want to give a shout out to my strong, wonderful, compassionate, loving, caring sister and friend in Christ Jesus, Marion, for pointing me to you. And it's been an honor to brother.
Wow.
And I hope others will come forward and reach out.
Awesome. Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who's walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project, Saturdays at 3 p.m., Sundays at 8 p.m. on KSKO, serving the western interior of Alaska for more than four decades. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.